Welcome to Food Neighbourhoods on Monocle 24. I am Markus Hippi. All cities have areas the locals love for their food and drink offerings, and in this series we get to know these places. Today we head to Tokyo's world-famous Tsukiji Fish Market. For 80 years, Tsukiji has highlighted Japan's amazing food culture with its uncountable wholesalers devoted to procuring the finest, most desirable seafood. Now in the middle of a relocation dispute, it seems, it will have to move elsewhere in near future. Professor Ted Bester is possibly the man who knows best the inner workings of Tsukiji, thanks to having spent years researching the world's largest fish market. He's also the author of the book Tsukiji, The Fish Market at the Center of the World. Monocle's Kenji Hall caught up with him and first went through some of the most astonishing stats regarding the market.
1,800 tons of fresh, frozen, and processed seafood go through the market every day. Everyone knows about the tuna auctions, but there are actually 480 types of seafood sold there, worth 1.5 billion Japanese yen daily, which is about 13 million euros a day. 42,000 people work at or use the market. There are 630 wholesale vendors, and 19,000 vehicles come and go every day. It's really hard to get your head around.
Right. Well, that's why one's first impression is physicality. How could so much seafood be gathered in one place? And what that those statistics don't show is how quickly that seafood moves. That's 1,800 metric tons every morning at, say, 2 a.m. By noon, most of it's gone. So there's just an incredibly rapid turnover, and that incredibly rapid turnover requires people who have very precise understandings of what they're doing, who are able to communicate efficiently, who are able to think on their feet, and who maintain just an incredible level of pride in what they do.
I'm interested to what extent you looked at the seasonality of the fish stocks themselves. You know, in Japan they talk a lot about when a fish is in season. For instance, the dagger-tooth pike conger, which in Japanese is hamo, or the sweet fish, which is ayu, or tobio, which is flying fish. That would be, those would be fish that you would most want to eat in the summer. Pacific sari, samma, in fall. Mackerel, saba, in winter. There's a very real grasp of what season you're in, when it's best to eat the fish, when the fish is at its sort of prime, fattiest. And that's very much tied to the way people eat in Japan.
But I think it's also important to note, when we talk about seasonality in English, we tend to use four terms, you know, fall, winter, spring, summer. Seasons, at least in a culinary sense, seasons in Japan last about 2 weeks. And so something that's supposed to be at its best in early June is not necessarily going to be something that you want to eat in July or even in late June. So every couple of weeks there's a new set of products that are cycling in, and so the best restaurants, the most exclusive Japanese restaurants serving seasonal cuisine, will only have something on their menu for 10 days, 2 weeks at most.
The other thing that I find interesting about the market is the fact that there is a dialect that people use in order to hide the prices that they're charging their own customers. There are no price lists. If you walk around the wholesale market, there are no price lists. And the fact that it's in this, what we refer to as shitamachi area, which is kind of this old Tokyo downtown central area.
Shitamachi is the old traditional merchant district of Edo, which is now Tokyo. And it had, for hundreds of years, its own distinct dialect. And a lot of the speech patterns, the language patterns of Tsukiji, to some extent reflect those old dialects. But the question of prices and the words that are used for prices is really interesting, because it also shows some of the social aspects of this market, which is the reason there are no posted prices is that nobody pays the same price. It depends on your relationship with the seller. So if you're a really good customer and you're there through thick and thin, you're going to get a better price than somebody who, you know, shows up every few months and buys a little bit and then disappears. So loyalty is rewarded, and it's rewarded in part by lower prices. It's rewarded as well by when things are tight, you can still get supplies because the wholesaler will say, well, I'll keep some aside for you. So the codes for prices, I wouldn't necessarily call them dialects, but codes for prices are just a way that you can talk about prices in your stall without any of the other customers understanding what you're saying. And presumably, if you're a really regular customer, you probably understand the code, but you're not going to tell anybody about it. But oftentimes, they'll pick a couple of lines of poetry in which each syllable is a different syllable, and so they'll have 9 or 10 syllables, and they'll just call out, "Aka," and that will reflect some particular coded price. And the person who's sitting in the cashier's booth will know what that code is and write down on the slip, you know, whatever it is, 30,000 yen per kilo, something like that. But then the guy who's standing there trying to decide whether he wants to buy something isn't going to necessarily understand that the other guy just paid 30,000 a kilo for it. And if he buys it, he's going to pay 40,000.
One thing that surprised you about the way the market works is they began shuffling the location of the individual stalls and shops inside of the wholesale area. So every few years, they have a lottery, and then everybody gets moved around. That, to me, would seem to invite chaos, because the market works a certain way, people are used to certain patterns of going about their work, and suddenly, the shop that you used to go to is no longer in the place where it was. And then, you know, a few years later, they do it again. It's just this miraculous thing that happens at the market. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. This is not a recent thing. They've been doing it for 50 or 60 years. One of the questions from the very first was, why are all these stalls so jumbled up? Why is there an octopus dealer next to a shrimp dealer, next to a tuna dealer, next to another octopus dealer? Didn't make any sense. I mean, my thought would be you'd probably have an octopus neighborhood and you'd have a shrimp neighborhood and everybody would be clustered. But no, they're spread out. There's no apparent rhyme or reason. So after I'd been visiting the market for a couple of months, I was introduced to somebody and he agreed to kind of walk me through the market and give me a tour. We walked around for an hour or so, and along the way I said, by the way, can you explain this? How is it that these shops are so different from each other? And I expected him to have some story about, well, you know, over time people change their businesses and, you know, it's just the historical development of these different companies. This guy decided to go into shrimp, that guy decided to go into octopus or whatever. And I was absolutely floored when he said, oh, we have a lottery. And I went, what? You have a what? And he said, yeah, we have a lottery, and every 4 or 5 years, everybody has to pick a new stall. And it turns out, at least according to my interpretation, this happens because there's a kind of implicit ethos of fairness, and that people recognize that there are some good locations and there are some bad locations, and inevitably some people are going to get disadvantaged because they're stuck right in the middle of a crowded block. And some people are going to have a great location because they happen to be right on a corner that has easy access to the outside. Now, in a Western country, that problem might be solved by a real estate market in which, okay, I want the flashy corner location, so I'm willing to pay $X thousand more a month in rent. This other guy's willing to accept a really crummy location because he's going to get a really cheap rent. But that's not the way it works here, at least at Tsukiji. The idea is that over a period of time, everybody's location should be more or less average. And so every 4 or 5 years, not automatically 4 or 5 years, but roughly on that cycle, they do this lottery and everybody moves to a new location. And the idea is that over time, the person who is in a really crummy location gets to have a chance at a better location. Somebody who's in a great location has to spend some time, you know, in kind of an average location. And it's really a major part of, as I say, this ethos that, yes, we're all competitors, we're all in business for ourselves, but we recognize that we're all in this together. We sink or swim together, and that means, at least to a certain extent, looking out for the person who's not got the most advantageous position right now. Now, if the person is not doing well in business because of his own ineptitude, that's a different story. But if it's some structural factor, like he's facing three pillars and so people can't get to his store, that's not his fault. There's nothing he can do about it, so over time we'll try and rectify it. There isn't a kind of a cutthroat, I'm in business to win and that means trampling you. And I think that's, I don't know that it's unique to Tsukiji, but it's certainly resonates with Japanese culture in general.
That was Professor Ted Bester talking about Tokyo's Tsukiji Fish Market. And as already mentioned, it seems the market will have to move at some point. So go and check it out before it's too late. This has been episode number 4 of Food Neighborhoods. Next week we continue in Zurich. For more food and drink stories, tune into the menu every Friday at 1900 London time. I am Markus Hippi. Thank you for listening and goodbye.